You're listening to the Speaking Tongues podcast. I'm your host, El Sharice. Each week, I sit down to a conversation with multilinguals where we discuss and celebrate language, life, and culture through our own perspectives.
Episode 141, Speaking Basque. Welcome back to another episode of Speaking Tongues. I'm here today with Irkene. Irkene is a PhD candidate in linguistic studies at the University of Miami. She's a Basque speaker and an advocate of minority languages and cultures. Her work focuses on the language variation in young Basque speakers and ethno-linguistic identities and attitudes toward Basque, both in the Basque country and in the Basque diaspora of Idaho. Thank you for joining me today, Irkene. How are you?
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And I'm so excited that you're here to join me today. We have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So I like to start each episode with the same question, which is, what is your first language and which languages have you learned to speak?
Okay. So since I come from a bilingual place, it's always hard to answer to the question of what is your first language. Mm-hmm. So I'll do it chronologically and then I explain why I think I have two first languages.
Okay.
So my home language is Spanish, as you can probably tell in my accent. So my whole family speaks Spanish as their main tongue. However, we are from the Basque country where the minority's language is Basque. So for me, I was lucky enough to go to the Basque school, which is where I acquired the language starting from 1 year and a half. So I don't have any memory of being monolingual. Mm. So whenever people tell me, like, what's your first language? I always tell Spanish or Basque, or like both, right? And this is a reality for the youth of the Basque country. For many of us, the language was lost. In my case, the last Basque speaker was my grandpa. So it got lost some generations ago, and now we are like taking it back. And for some people, they were lucky enough that it got until their close family, right? So mm-hmm. Yeah, we have different kind of speakers. So those are my two first languages, although chronologically speaking, Basque would be my early second language. And then I studied many more. So my third one is English. It's compulsory for all of us. But besides that, you know, I went to English school in the afternoons and all that stuff. And then also I took French in high school, lived for a little while in Canada, although people would answer to me in English because of, I didn't have French accent, obviously. So that. And then after that, I also took Italian and Catalan, which is also a minoritized language of the Iberian Peninsula. So those are the ones where I can say I feel comfortable speaking. Then I did a little bit of Farsi, a little bit of Quechua, but I would never say that I know those languages.
Oh, so taking it back to going to Basque school, and you're living in the Basque country, and you said that a lot of people, you know, they lost their language, and we know mm-hmm. why, but we'll talk a bit about that later. But in your case, or in the case of people that you went to school with or that you grew up with, were they sent to Basque school also, or was that a decision that was common for parents to send their children to Basque school, in such as your case, or was it not that common? Did parents see the value in sending it, or was it like mm-hmm. a decision that certain parents felt like this is important for our child to learn this language?
There was a bit of everything. It started in the 80s. So I'm from the 97, I was born in 97. So there had been already 10 years of experimenting this. So the innovation, before that, there were already some sort of private clandestine and Basque schools, but we're not talking about those. So when it was official in the 82 for the Basque Autonomous Community, 86 for Navarro, et cetera, the innovation was that suddenly you could be in public education in Basque.
Okay.
So we have three models. One is everything in Spanish, the other one, everything in Basque, which is what we call the Basque immersion system, which is actually public school. So that's why what is great. And then the last one that's like a mixed model, and it really depends on the school. So at first, people were like, scared of this new thing, but ideologically speaking, they thought that it was important for the children to acquire masks. And what they saw is that since it was a new model and they had to gain the trust of the parents and the society, there was a lot of investment. So it was a super innovative model of young professors, people that were learning Basque just to, you know, make it go forward. Mm-hmm. So it turned out being a great success. So by the time I was born, and I would say right now, the majority of the people are enrolled in that model.
Okay.
And it's public system. You can choose to learn Spanish, but it's a choice made by your parents. So it's a bit of everything. It's because parents already trust the system because it's successful. Also, you learn three languages, so it's Basque, Spanish, and English. So in that term, everyone wins. And also, of course, ideologically speaking, it's a conscious decision. You can't enroll your children there just because, the more language, the languages, the merrier. But in this case, there was also this discourse of, okay, we've lost our language. Mm. For the last years, there was a lot of persecution. We want our kids to have what we couldn't have.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people that tried to learn the language when it was forbidden, but it was hard for many reasons. So giving that opportunity to the children, it was something that many parents were really convinced of.
Yeah. Were you finding situations where, like you said, the last Basque speaker in your family was your grandfather? So mm-hmm. were you finding many situations where your peers, their parents didn't speak the language?
Yeah, in my town, it was the majority of us. So it all depends when you're born, right? So for us, we live very close to the Spanish-speaking border. So as it happens everywhere, the language has been better preserved in the center. And then for us who are closer to the border, more Spanish is spoken or more French in the case of the northern part, right? Mm-hmm. So for us in my class, I think that out of 25, only two people have Basque-speaking parents.
Wow.
So it's crazy, yeah. So in the
recess, like recess?
Yeah, the recess, exactly. So the general language would be Spanish for us because it was the language that we would use with our friends, our family, etc. So learning that language, Basque, actually provided us with the opportunity to having any chance to get inserted in the Basque community, because if not, there's no chance. For example, in my town, I think it was in the 70s or the 80s, only 10% of the population knew Basque, and right now it's the 33%.
Yes. So
it might seem little, but that's huge.
It is.
Yeah.
That's amazing. In what, 40, 50 years to have that many more people, I think that's such good news.
Yeah.
I have a random question.
Okay. Cool.
And it's probably kind of silly, but I would imagine, like, you know, when you go to school and then you come home and you do your homework and you don't know what you're doing and you need help from your parents, and your parents can help you. But if you're coming home from Basque school and your parents don't speak Basque, Euskera, then how do you handle that? Or did you have that experience? Am I projecting? Or did you have that experience? Or maybe some of your peers? Like, how was that handled?
Well, that's actually an amazing question, because that, like, sums up very graphically the sacrifice that so many parents have done so that their children could have Basque as their language. So in my case, I was lucky, because even though this is my mom's story, it's different than the rest. So even though our home language was Spanish, she tried for a while for it to be Basque. So she's the daughter of that grandpa that was the last Basque speaker. She learned standard Basque so she could communicate with her father and the family members. However, since they spoke a different dialect, they couldn't understand. So they were frustrated. Then we were born and she tried to transmit the language to my brother and me. But then this is sad. We would reply to her that Basque is only for school. So you can get the mindset. Like right now, obviously I've changed, but that's something that parents have to deal with.
Yeah.
You want your children to learn Basque, to speak Basque among each other, but there's that kind of resistance. So it isn't really until people are like teenagers or until they go to college and they meet with other Basque speakers from other parts of the Basque country that's not your town, that you do that click. Like, wow, I'm not speaking my language with anyone. Because even though it's not our first language, for us it's our language. It's the ancestral language. So there's some sort of symbolism. So in my case, I was lucky that even though my mom stopped speaking Basque to us because she was frustrated, she knew. she had the advanced diploma and everything. She's like super nerdy. She did it in a really short time. And she has all this knowledge that she was able to correct really advanced writings. So I had that at home. But for a lot of people, that was a problem. And so I know at some schools, they have some sort of support class, like extracurricular for parents that wanted to either learn Basque or for children who needed help, but their parents couldn't assist them. So we have those sort of things, but obviously those are resources that aren't available in our schools, or you know, if parents work, they can't just go and take Basque classes after work because life is busy.
Of course, yeah.
So it is a challenge, but that's why it's so important to remark the huge sacrifice that they have been doing all these years.
Wow. That is a sacrifice, of course. Mm. And, you know, life is so busy for everyone. So I'm glad that, you know, you had that and you were able to, I'm glad that your mom had the foresight and the knowledge to you know, to be that bridge between generations and, you know, to help you on your path. Maybe you don't know this or have an answer to this, but the people that you went to school with, like your peers at that time or early on in the Basque education, did they continue with learning the language or did they decide that it wasn't for them? Do you know?
There's a bit of everything. I only know the stories of those who I'm close with. So let's say I know the story of like maybe 20 people, something like that. So there's a bit of everything. The majority, they did college studies in Basque, so that's good. And they built some relationships in Basque, but the majority are in Spanish. So this is the thing, if you stay in your hometown, in our case, Bilbao is the closest city, it's more likely that you develop relationships with people from a similar profile to yours.
Mm.
So for those people, Spanish predominated. However, if in those classes there's people from a more Basque-speaking town, that's where it gets interesting because that's the challenge starts. So college in general is an interesting time. However, there's people who did the BA in English, I mean, because most like more international. So in that case, I don't really know how it worked. There's people who chose to study in Spanish because life would be easier, which I understand. But for those who made that decision, what happened is that after their BA was done, they didn't have the fluidity anymore. So then you have two paths. Either you live with that or they start going to Basque classes so that they take you at refresh course. They can also work in Basque if they needed to. So there's a bit of everything. And then there's a minority like me and other people I know that we had like a Basque speaking group in college. So Basque was predominant. And in that case, that's, well, for me, it's beautiful because it's a moment that really allows you to choose, like, okay, you have now the choice to live in Basque. Are you going to take it or not?
Yeah.
And that's where it gets interesting. You get out of your comfort zone and you have two words in a way.
Ooh, I love that.
So there are a lot of different tracks to take. It wasn't a simple answer. So
yeah, no, it's okay. This is your story. And I'm excited to learn about, you know, what people are doing and what you've observed. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
Like I said before, it is a language isolate and there are people who are learning the language and they face challenges with learning the language.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think, or have you, well, I guess two questions. Have you noticed this attitude toward the language that learners have? And two, if you've noticed that attitude, why do you think that people feel that way?
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. And I often think that it's more of an ideological discourse that we have learned that Basque is hard, Basque is hard. Often you hear it from people that have never gone or have never been to a Basque class. So it's an argument that annoys me. It really depends where you are coming from. So like, for instance, let's say local, right? So if you speak Spanish or French, one, pronunciation is going to be really easy. And two, vocabulary. I'm not going to say all of it, but let's say being conservative, one third, you also have it in common with Spanish, French, or Latin, because we have been in contact with those three languages for a lot of centuries now.
Mm-hmm.
So the most shocking part is how the morphology works, or the verbs, right? The case markers, etc. because it's an agglutinant language. So that means Spanish and French are flexive, right? Like the ending changes. English is an isolating, so that means that the verb barely changes, like I eat, you eat, stays the same, right? And agglutinant is that you go adding things one on top of another. So I understand why at first it can be very overwhelming. But if you ask me, when I see like the chart of the Basque verbs, I have the feeling that it has been designed by an engineer. It's super mathematical, super logical. I don't want to say that it barely has exceptions, but comparing to Spanish or French, it's free. It doesn't have as many exceptions. Or like Spanish morphology, it's crazy. Like all these verbs, all these roots, etc. And people learn it anyway. That's why I often think that's more of an ideological issue. Mm-hmm. Also because I know a lot of people who have Basque as their second language, but they learn it in adulthood. And now they are like super famous, successful mm-hmm. linguists, teachers. They work in public administration and they speak perfect. So for me, it's hard to believe. But of course, it really depends on an individual, how you relate with languages, what experience you have, if you need it, or if you feel like someone is imposing to you, that makes a lot. So if you're learning it, for instance, because you are marrying a Basque-speaking person or you are joining a Basque-speaking community, I think that's a different way of learning a language that if you need it for a public position. That's what I think. That's my opinion. Of course, I was lucky to acquire it from childhood, so I'm no one here.
That table that you're saying that you feel was designed by an engineer, are you talking about the, what is it called? The Aditztaula?
Yes. Yes, Aditztaula is like verb table, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. So I saw that table once a few years ago. And at first I was like, what am I looking at? Right. And then I saw it again when I did another vast conversation on the show. And my guest kind of walked me through it. And I said, you know, this is not that complicated. It's very, there's a formula. It's very formulaic. And that's when I realized, I think Basque might be a language that I could learn because I like puzzles. And to me, it looked like a puzzle. It looked like,
it is just, a puzzle.
Yeah, but I love a challenge and I love a puzzle. So just, that's when I started to read. And I will say Basque is the language and learning more about Basque is what helped me to reframe like looking at language, especially grammar, because I like puzzles. So if I look at a language and I look at the grammar like a puzzle, it makes more sense to me. I can process it like easier. Exactly. So Basque really changed the way that I think and the way that I look, the way that I look. If only a language could just magically change the way I look, change the way that I look at languages and the way that I approach learning a new language. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's like one of my favorite things that I've learned.
About. For example, when you said that you learn German or you tried,
I tried. I didn't get far.
So I have friends learning German and they say, well, thanks to learning Basque, everything makes so much sense. Because Basque also has declinations, right? Like Latin or German. But the good news is that we don't have like five sorts, you know, like Latin had. I don't know about German, but we don't have, for instance, divided by feminine, masculine, and neuter. It's one.
Yeah.
The end. So that's why I'm like, if all these big languages have these characteristics, this sounds more like an ideological discourse to me because people learn those.
That's why when I said difficult, I'm like, I know that's not the right word. And I took it back because I think it's unfair to categorize a language as difficult because like you said, it depends on where you're coming from and what your baseline or what your background is. And that can change everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't think any language is difficult to learn. I think it just depends on your mindset. Yeah. And I think it depends on your background. So I just want you to know, we love Basque country. We love Basque language over here. So I'm so happy to. I saw on your Instagram that you had a post, I think it was a shared post, talking about varieties of Basque in historical context. And I'd love to talk about the dialectical changes across the region in the present day, or as they relate to history and historical context.
Basically, well, it's two things, like one the post and then I try to merge the whole answer. So right now, well, according to Suazo, which is our most famous dialectologist, we have 5 varieties of Basque. So just as a reminder for people who might not be familiarized, the Basque country is divided in the Southern Basque country, where we are bilinguals with Spanish, and Northern Basque country, where they are bilinguals with French. So for us, we call them the 7 historical provinces, because it used to be under the Kingdom of Navarre, etc. So sometimes when I say Basque country, it's confusing. When I say Basque country, I'm referring to the linguistic territory.
Okay.
Just in case. Okay, so said that. Right now, it's considered that there are 5 varieties, right? So it would be the Western or Vizcayan, where I'm from, the Central one, the Northern Navarrese, I think. I'm missing one. The Eastern. I don't know. Well, I got lost, but there are 5, let's say. So what I was talking about in that post is that, well, right now the Basque that we study in the education is a standard Basque, and that's usually the one that's used for media, documents, and anything that's official. So the standard Basque was based on the central variety, which is the variety spoken around Donosti or San Sebastian. Also on the part that has the longest literary history, which is around the zone of Sara or Bayona, maybe it's more known, so that people can locate in the map. So that area, right? It's far away from Bilbao, far away from Europeans, like 2 hours and a half away from Bilbao, let's say. So what happened is that's where the standard variety is based. That's what we all learn. But what happens is that in those places where the standard variety and the local variety don't match, those who speak the standard variety are often perceived as like non-authentic, weird, too official, like why are you talking like that? However, as we mentioned before, the revitalization process has been possible thanks to education. So right now, the majority, all the youth speak standard Basque, right? But for those who only have the variety acquired in school, they don't have the family variety too, they only speak standard Basque. And this is a problem because it's associated with being a second language learner and hence non-native, not part of the community. So this is what happens in linguistics papers, in documentaries, everywhere. Every time I see a map, even in Instagram, all these accounts of doing maps, not Cactus Mapper because he's the best, he knows a lot. But all these accounts, when they speak out the territory where Basque is spoken, they misuse the dialectological map. And that map is only the one made by Suazo. It's only locating the historical varieties in the map. But then all the south is blank, implying that we don't speak Basque there. Wrong. We don't speak a local variety there because it got lost, but we do speak standard Basque. Hence, the territory where Basque is spoken, it's wider. So this is a problem because a lot of people from metropolitan areas such as Bilbao or Iruña or Pamplona, etc., they feel like they are not even considered as Basque speakers. One, because they don't even appear in the map, and two, because as soon as they speak, they get delegitimized by other speakers because of how they speak. Because it's not the local variety that would correspond to that territory. So that's the situation. So for the Basque varieties are different among them. We can understand each other, mostly. But it is true that if someone speaks standard variety in one of the provinces that are not where it came from, let's say, it's shocking. It's still shocking, especially with older people, etc. So, like, well, for example, I learned the local variety afterwards, right? I only had a school variety, but I learned it afterwards. I wanted to reconnect with my roots, blah, blah, blah. So I can manage that one. When I went to Boise, Idaho, when I'm talking to old people, they told me, but you speak standard, you speak weird. And I'm like, I'm doing my best to keep it clean and speak as local as I can. But everyone speaks mixed in the Basque country right now. Like if you've gone to school, you have the vocabulary of the one you're in school, which is more formal, and the one spoken in town, right? But it's a comment that you get a lot. The post was about that. Our legitimation also standard Basque as a variety because it has been an unspoken variety for 30 years now, at least. And also those speakers to locate them in the map. So just not to mix the historical varieties and where Basque is spoken, because right now there's other bus that's not a historical variety, but a new one.
Right. Hello, language lovers. If you're enjoying this episode of Speaking Tongues, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the Speaking Tongues podcast on Apple Podcasts, and like and subscribe on Spotify and YouTube so that other language lovers like ourselves can find this show. If you've been a longtime listener of the show or even a recent listener, you can now pledge ongoing support for the show on buymeacoffee.com or on patreon.com. I just wrote down some notes off of what you're saying because I don't want to lose my train of thought. I don't want to forget. But I guess the first question I want to ask you is, so the people who they lost their local variety, so they only have the standard variety. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was lost generations ago, right? Not them.
Yeah. Do you want to tell our listeners why that is?
Well, they're having different reasons. Basque has been, it's complicated. It has never been a status language. Like, there are other minorities language that at some point they were the language of the middle class or the bourgeois or something. So we know that we have some royal people that spoke Basque, but in general, it wasn't the official language. It has mm-hmm. never been. It has always been associated with the rural world, with being uneducated, etc. So that's one thing. All the people that migrated to the city eventually dropped the language, and this is something that happens all around the world, right? And then secondly, and the 20th century was rough for us for many reasons. For the French Basque bilinguals, I know that they were recruited to fight the First World War. I'm not sure of the second one. They were taken to Paris. There was like some specific targeting discriminations with people that spoke a minority language in the Basque country, Occitanie, etc. And then in the case of Basque-speaking bilinguals, from the 36 to 39, it was the Spanish Civil War. It was a coup d'etat. I don't know if that works in English. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, led by Franco. He won. The nationals won. It was that led to a 40-year-long anti-75 dictatorship that was fascist. Fascist, from right wing, Catholic, mm-hmm. everything. But more importantly, it was a very centralizing dictatorship that didn't allow any of the minorities' language to be spoken. No languages or identities, like even the symbols, they were banned. You couldn't have a Basque name or Catalan, Galician, Asturian, any other languages, right? So that was a huge setback from Basque. That's okay. In recent history, there have been many things. And because of that, it's like the story of my town. By the end of the 20th century, only 10% of the population spoke Basque.
Yeah. So knowing this history, and I guess everybody in the country, in the Basque country, I like saying País Vasco because I like the way it sounds, but I don't want to sound pretentious when I say it. Anyway, everybody in Basque country presumably knows this history. And has been impacted by this horrible, horrible dictatorship. So my second question is, in the standard versus the local variety, and if you're someone who, you know, you don't have a local variety, or you've been so horribly victimized to the point of your language being like gone, so you don't have the local variety, you only have the standard variety. Why would people make fun of you because you speak a standard variety or tell you that you talk funny? Like, I feel like that's not very kind.
No, I mean, I have to say that it went both ways. Oh. I always have to explain this because if not, it feels like I'm only attacking the others, but it is true that when Standard Basque, they designed it, I think it went out to the public in 1968. But all the official campaigns started in the 80s once the literacy was over, and etc. So it was true that for those who spoke Basque, like a local variety, they saw the standard variety as a threat. Because and this also happens with English, when someone launches standard variety, you know, like the mainstream English, it isn't always clear if you are talking about the correct one or a variety that you choose for academia. So often it's misinterpreted. Instead of saying, okay, like this is a variety for the media academia, but yours is cool. There's this message sent probably, like, probably the campaign was not done very successfully, I was like, okay, your variety is wrong. Now you have to speak this. So people are like, well, now mine is wrong. So there's a lot of push and pull, you know, it's not like black or white. So there are all these ideologies that speakers are fighting with. So besides all the prohibition, our own ideologies also play a super important role. All the shame, thinking that, okay, if I cannot transmit the right bus to my children, then I better switch to Spanish. There was this thought, I always say the same because I love it, in my dad's side, Basque was lost in my great-grandparents' generation, I think. And they all had a saying in that town. It was a fisherman's town. It said, Euskara charto, ta en castellano peor, which means in Basque, bad, and Spanish, even worse. And it's very cool because it's a code switch expression, right? So they had that feeling that their Spanish was super bad because it was influenced by Basque, but their Basque was super bad too because it had nothing to do with what it was considered to be the good Basque, which is the one that's more speaking around the area of San Sebastian or Donost.
I understand.
These things, we see them in a lot of minoritized contexts. Like a friend from the PhD is now doing research in Quechua in Amazon, and it happens the same with the standard Quechua and the Amazonian Quechua. It's crazy.
My gosh. And you know, it makes me think about, there's so much trauma that is surrounding, I'm assuming, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I assume there's so much trauma surrounding minoritized languages, because it's not only the physical loss of the language, but also, I guess, people who feel, what's the right way to transmit this language? What's the wrong way to transmit this language? And the people who are doing it are probably also unhealed from their trauma, exactly. Rightfully so. So they're transmitting their trauma along with the language onto the next generation. So there's so much to unpack. Like,
it's definitely so much.
Wow. I'm glad we're having this talk. I really am. And you know, once I get my pencil out, that things are getting things are heating up, because I want to keep my thoughts straight. I wanted to ask you, and you can talk from your own experience, but your local Basque versus the standard, can you give us some examples of how there are differences and what they sound like and how they're used differently?
Okay, so when people ask me this, I always panic because I tend to get too technical because I'm a linguist, so I think in morphemes.
Geek out, Eukene.
Like, for instance, the auxiliary verbs, right? We have to be and to have, like it happens in French and Italian. So for the one to have, the root changes. So in the Western variety, the root would be an O. So I have, it would be Nick Dot, you have, subdosu, etc. Whereas in the central one, it's with the E, like Nick Det, suk desu. Whereas in the standard Basque, it was chosen the form from the area of Bayona, which is with a U, Nick Dut, suk dusu. And then if we go to the Eastern variety, it's the U, like the French, the one that's U. So it would be like Nick Dut, suk dusu, or something like that. I'm terrible doing it. So that's one example. You might think, like, okay, if it's just a vowel, it should be easy. It should be, but things get tricky for some reason. The same with the verb. The thing is that these vowel changes happen in a lot of things. So, like, in the auxiliary verb to be, it's the same. In the Western variety, it's everything with an A, ni nas, I am, susara, you are. But then if we go to the Central variety, they do, like, this ea thing. Like, it would be susera, you are. If you go to the Eastern, it's susira with an E and that glottal R. So there are technical things, you know. Also, even the article in standard, it's A, and it has, I don't know how many forms. You cannot say the article and put the accent there, put an E instead of the A. It's exhausting. And then I think that the worst part, though, is the vocabulary, because the vocabulary changes. The Basque Academy has some really cool maps that you search for. It can be either a linguistic feature or a word, and how it changes from valley to valley. I'm talking valleys, not even dialects. And it's crazy how many words we have for the same thing and how it changes. Like, you can drive 10 minutes and the world is already different. It's a lot of knowledge to have. I think that on the education part, this is a critique I have. I think they could do a better work of getting people from different varieties in contact with each other, like instead of doing this exchange with France or Germany. I think it would be cool to first know our language. Yeah, that's a critique, because something that happens is that we learn, at least for us, I learned a list of synonyms, which again, I love because I'm a nerd, but people usually hate doing that. So it's when you go to a, I don't know, like let's say a popular party, which is 1 hour away, and it's so overwhelming because you need to unpack how to, they say the article, how they say the auxiliary verbs, the vocabulary they're using, plus their own slang. It can be too much.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like when you're moving through País Vasco and you are speaking one, you know, version of the language and you go 1 hour away and it's different. Do people understand one another or do people not understand one another?
It depends on the distance. So
okay.
The varieties that are spoken in the center and they're in contact with each other, they tend to understand each other very well because their communication has never been cut. However, for those who live in the limits, like myself, I live in the western limit, or those who live in the eastern. It gets really hard. From limit to limit, it gets really hard.
Wow.
And then from limit to the center, it gets hard. But in that case, I think we're super lucky to have a standard Basque, because whenever I travel, let's say east, I always try to use as a standard as I can get, so that they will understand me. And if they think that my Basque is fake, then okay, we'll probably fight about it, but at least they understood me. So yeah, I think it's a lot about accommodating to wherever you're visiting and not navigating. But again, with Spanish, maybe it's not that hardcore, but with vocabulary, with Spanish, that happens. It changes so much from country to country, even from region to region. That's crazy. And you just get used to it. Maybe not in one night, but you make the effort. So I think we should have that, yeah, that mentality too. Like, okay, let's make this work.
Yeah. So when you were in Idaho, which I would say maybe is the easternmost region of the Basque country. I'm teasing. Yeah. I'm teasing. But when you're in Idaho and you were speaking to the people, like you said earlier, the Basque population there, and they're telling you, oh, you speak this standard form of the language. What forms of the language were they speaking? Like, was it all over? Was it a mix of everything? Or do you notice maybe the people out there were speaking from one particular region of the area? Okay.
Lucky for me, they spoke Western Basque.
Okay.
I have been very trained and I have read a lot of texts and I have a lot of friends. So that's amazing. So the majority of them, I don't know if people are familiar with the city or the town of Guernica, is where the Nazi bombing happened. And then Pablo Picasso did the painting. I don't know, just for people to locate the place. So they were from that area. And I have had many roommates in college that were from that town. So I was super familiarized with the dialect. And there's also a famous artist called Gatibu who sings in the dialect. So I really try to accommodate. Like I would even change how I say my verbs, my own verbs, and making to them also the articles I use there, etc. So luckily for me, the majority of them came from that area. And then a couple of them from the central part, from Gipuzkoa. So since I spoke the standard, I could navigate well. But for the elders that maybe they are not so used to watching TV in Basque or listening to standard, I just spoke weird to them. Also because it's like a time machine. Like, I don't know if I will remember the words, but they obviously say words that no one says anymore.
Right.
Because they are like, I don't know, they are most of them in the 70s, I think. So that's like talking with my grandparents. In Spanish, they use words that I would never use. I can't remember what, but they were the typical words that you use, like, I don't know, for glasses or for underwear. Like, they are like these super old words that no one uses. So some of them, I could get through them, but I would never say them. So I played a lot with synonyms, and if the Basque ones didn't work, I would give them the one in Spanish.
In Spanish.
Because often, since they weren't alphabetized in Basque, what they used to do in the past is that for all these words that are for like new products. They use the Spanish word and then they put the Basque article. So that was my little trick. So far it worked. I think they got more overwhelmed than I did, but I was like, no, we need to keep trying. And there was even one man that he loved to tell jokes, and although the town knew him, and he would switch to Spanish with me, and it was like, no, I didn't come all the way here so I would speak in Spanish. You and I will get along in Basque. I'll do my best, you do your best. But yeah, in that sense, I was lucky because, for example, the diaspora of the area of San Francisco, the majority of them came from the Northern Basque Country. So their second language is French. Then I would freak out because my French is good, but not as good. I'm not as confident. I don't have all the vocabulary. If they tell me an ancient word, there's no way I'm going to get it. So in that sense, yeah, Western Basque, I was lucky to get through it.
I love the language time machine. I think it's not something I've, you know, I'm personally familiar with because my first language is English and my grandparents' language was English. So I personally have not had to go that, but I'd go through that. But I find it so interesting because it's, to me, it's just an example of what language can do, you know, and a living example of how much language changes and how, like, it's just so cool. So I know that you have a focus on minority languages and you have encountered, you know, many of them. What have you noticed about minority languages that, you know, what do you think they've done well in terms of educating speakers and educating the next generation? What do you think that they've done well? And I guess looking at Basque, what do you think that Basque has done well as far as educating its future speakers, its children, its next generation, that maybe other minoritized languages can take from or learn from? Or, you know, what can Basque learn from other minority languages as well in that regard?
It's a hard question. Well, yeah, obviously the most, the best thing that the Basque language has done or the people working with it is education. I think that's something we're very lucky to have. And in some cases, we can even be the envy of others. So that's what's best. And that's what I have seen that other minority languages have been replicating. Also, the summer schools, like summer boarding schools. I know that in the area of Santiago de Chile, they were working with Mapusugun. So they created like this immersion camp, let's say, where you take classes, but you also have do activities related to folklore. So something that it gets repeated, obviously, it's the preservation of language in the folklore. So, and that could also be seen in Boise, but also in, I don't know, in Corniche, for example, that they have been doing a lot of work to revitalize it lately. So the typical example that you don't know the language, but then some ex-holiday comes and you know the ritual or you know the lyrics of the songs, etc. And that's something super important. For example, in our case, the times of the dictatorship, many people in my family, they didn't know the language, but they still know the songs by heart. And that's something, maybe I'm getting like too romantic here, but I think that it can be like very powerful because it's a way to keep you connected somehow. It's your last connection, really. If you lost that, it's done. So yeah, what else? Education, folklore. Also, I was this summer in Wales and they had like these super cool summer camps for kids. So they would do everything that you do in a summer camp, like sports, craft, anything, but in Welsh. I'm very focused about that Welsh, I don't know, identity, preserving the dances, the songs, the instruments. So I think that's a really nice way to, you know, like put your foot in, like a first step, creating that sense of community, accepting, because there's a lot of people that they feel very identified with certain minorities' identity, but they don't have the language, and that's often an obstacle. Well, a typical case that happens in the USA, you know, with Chicanos or like the descendants of Mexicans, like they don't speak the language or they speak it so they're not recognized as Mexicans nor Americans. That kind of situation, but grew up in minoritized languages. So, yeah. Also, if I want to point out dynamic that's definitely helped us would be obviously the Catalans. They're lucky enough to have, like, I think it's like 10 million speakers. So it's, even though it's a minoritized language, they have so many speakers. I think it's a minoritized language in Europe with the highest number of speakers. So in their case, they have all public education. If I understood correctly, all the public education is in Catalan. So they don't have like we will have three models, one Spanish, one mixed, one Basque, right? So this has two parts. One, the part that I envy is that everyone knows Catalan. So it doesn't matter your background. This is especially important for the people who migrate there, for their children. Everyone is able to communicate in Catalan. And that's automatically, it opens the doors for you to get into that community if you want. However, I know that that has been problematic. There's a lot of people who complain that they want to have public education in Spanish. So I know that's problematic. The Basque country, we are not there yet. I don't think that's even our objective, just in case, because we are happy right now. But it is true that like there's some initiative. It's called Mantinc el Català in Instagram. I don't know if you saw it, which translates as I maintain the Catalan. And it's a super cool initiative about maintaining your language. So if someone comes to your business, just being firm of maintaining the language, maybe doing like three tryouts, try to explain it with different words, and if they don't get it, then you switch. This can also be problematic, but it's something that it has definitely helped them maintain the language. Whenever, now I speak Catalan, but before when I traveled there, I had to do a thing at the bank, which is, it's hard, like it gives you anxiety. And the woman there would only speak to me in Catalan. And I didn't want to say like, oh, you know, I'm a tourist, so I don't understand anything. Because right now, Catalonia is filled up with tourists, so everyone can tell that. But I think that's something super cool. Again, it can bring confrontation. One of my professors said that Basque language had disappeared because we are too polite. Because if we're in a group of six people and one doesn't speak Basque, the rest, the five of us, will switch to Spanish. Wow. And that's a problem that doesn't happen in Catalonia.
I want to talk about your trip. And you took that trip to Idaho as a part of your research. What did you observe? And what did you experience? And what were some of your big takeaways? And what did you think of Idaho?
Well, first of all, I couldn't rent a car. So for me, Idaho is just Boise. And I walked and it was a happy person. So no, I have to say that it really surprised me. Especially, well, coming from Miami, I have been in other places in the USA, but I had this image of being unwalkable, let's say. And not only Boise is very walkable, but also it has the Basque community have a great sense of group belonging that I have never seen in the USA. Again, I have to visit more places. There are more communities that have this feeling. But for me, it was impressive. This feeling that everyone knows each other, you say the surname, to the point that I started asking for surnames. So I was like, I've only been here 1 week. Am I going crazy? So this like little town, a way of seeing the world. Everyone knew their families. Everyone made like these recommendations like, oh, if you like Basque food, you have to visit this and that. On Wednesdays, they have paella here, but you have to go here for the meatballs. Like all these, I don't know, very specific. These routines that everyone in town related to the Basque community would follow. Let's say like every Friday at this time, everyone goes to the Basque center to graduate. Because you know that everyone is going to be there. That's the only reason. So for me, it was, well, that's amazing sociologically speaking, but talking more about the community, it's definitely impressive that they preserve the language. So for the elders, that's obvious because they were the descendants of the immigrants. They lived in the countryside with other Basque families in the farm. So that's obvious that they would get it. But what's really impressive is that some of their descendants also got past the language. And also some of them told me some stories. I was like, man, like your mom was an activist. Like one of them, so she was the daughter of an immigrant and her daughter also speaks super good Basque. And she told me that her mom, when she was about to marry her dad, went to the Basque country, talked to her siblings. Spanish had already got into in the town. And so she was like, okay, you have to talk in Basque to your siblings to your children, because if not, when mine come here, they will not have anyone to talk with.
Oh.
And I was like, damn, we're talking like in the 60s.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. I don't know, I thought it was like so futuristic. And also there was another family that they own a shop, a store, so they were very used to other farmers coming in, the speakers, etc. And the mom told their children, you're not going to learn Spanish until you dominate Basque. Once you do, then you will learn Spanish. Yeah, we're talking about, I don't know how many years ago, like that's crazy activism. And yeah, so I was really impressed and moved by so many of the stories. And also, it's really cool to see that there's still a big flow of Basque people from Basque country going there. Like young people, not people that want to immigrate necessarily, but for instance, they have a Basque kindergarten. So every year, every 2 years, a person from the, yeah, very cool. A person from the Basque country goes to be their teacher. So there's that flow. And then, you know, couples, immerse, like someone from the Basque country with a Basque American, or I don't know, people that goes for college studies, or just because we have so idealized the Basque diaspora that they want to spend some time there and work in whatever. So it's really cool that they have all these internship or work opportunities from people from the Basque country, so that the flow never stops.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are a lot of business that are in contact with the Basque government, so they get some sponsorship to keep it going. And I thought it was crazy, like, wow, all the events. They have like these Basque dances. They are really, really good Basque dancers, and they are known in the diaspora, their Basque dancing team. So they have also the children, and they do these performances on Sundays. And then the others train like crazy, you know, like in the American movies that they have to train for being the best cheerleaders. That, but with that Basque dance, it's, I don't know, it's crazy. I loved it so much, and I loved it that they were very welcoming, even though I'm clearly not a member of the community. I don't speak like them. I'm not American. I'm a foreigner. I'm a researcher, so I had like a lot of things that made me definitely a person that was out of the group. And they were so nice to me. They recommended me each other. I don't know. I feel like unreal. I thought it was unreal.
That's amazing. How long were you there?
I think it was only like 2 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, that's so short.
Yeah. Yeah, the longest I could go, because I was still taking classes. So
that's true.
I did the spring break, and then I missed 1 week of classes.
I'm glad that you had that opportunity to go. And even though it was short, I'm glad that you got to conduct your research and you got to feel like a part of the community and welcomed. And will you go back?
Yeah, I want to. They do this festivity that's called Jaialdiz festivity in Basque. I think it's every 5 years, not sure, because of COVID it got cut down.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, it's going to be again in 2025, and it's usually crazy. It's like 1 week of craziness. So I would really go to, I'd love to go. I have to say, you know, it all depends on how my PhD goes, if I'm here, if I'm in this country, somewhere else. But I really would love to go for pleasure, like no interviews, no bugging anyone around, just be there, eat, drink, and have fun.
I would love to go. I heard it was a lot of fun. Well, first of all, I want to say Eskarikasko for this conversation. Sweet. And I really enjoyed learning from you and talking with you. And I think that my listeners will know this is the third conversation I've had about Basque. But what I love, it is, but what I love is that, and I think I want people to know this is the point of the show too, is that everybody's story is different and everybody relates to a language differently. And this conversation that I've had is not like the one I had before, and it's not like the one I had before. So I hope that people are taking each opportunity to learn a little bit more from different people and a little bit more about different people's stories in relation to the language. And I thank you for sharing yours and sharing all of your wisdom and knowledge with us here today.
Thank you. To you, literally. Yeah, for inviting me. I love this. I love this show, and I love talking to you about this anytime.
Let us know. Tell us about what you're working on. Tell us a bit about your PhD program and what you're studying. And, you know, I mentioned a little bit of that in the intro, but if there's more that you want to share, I'd love to hear more about it. And let us know your social media handle and where to find you.
Okay, so many things to let you all know. So step by step, my PhD program is literary, cultural, and linguistic studies. Obviously, I'm doing my focus on linguistic studies and some cultural things too. The University of Miami, it's a program that's very interdisciplinary, so it let us really work with really experimental stuff. In my case, I'm dealing mostly with language, migration, identity, basically those are it. And what you explained before, well, what I'm doing right now, my thesis, is I'm studying how the Basque language itself changes into different communities. So one is the one in Boise, and the other one is my town. As I told you before, it's located very close to the limit. We have all these ideological shames. It's been an interesting context. It's not like a regular one, right? I'm hoping to find some things that we share. When I talk to them, I feel very identified with this border being situation. Like you feel that you are from someone, but then the community doesn't really recognize you as so necessarily. Obviously, the cases are different because we are born in the Basque Country, but there are cool stuff there. So basically, I'm just saying how language changes and how that's related with how we self-identify our experiences, if we consider ourselves native or not, how we think of our Basque. So, well, for me, it's very exciting. I'm really happy right now. I'm working on the statistics and I'm going crazy, but at the same time, I'm enjoying them. And what else? Yes, my social media. Well, I think that I'm mostly active on Instagram, and that would be at minority language in two, because one got shut down by Meta.
No.
Thank you. Yeah. The same for Threads. Still getting there. I'm not sure how that's going to go.
Thank you for sharing that. And I will add links to your social platform in the show notes for this episode so that people can click and get in touch with you right away. I'm going to say we, because collectively, I want everyone to be excited about this, but we are really looking forward to your thesis and looking forward to your findings and you becoming a doctor.
Like awesome.
A doctor, a whole doctor. I look forward to calling you Dr. Eukene one day, someday soon. And thank you for all the work that you do for your language, for the language of the Basque people, and for minority languages in general. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for your support and for this amazing podcast.
Absolutely. I like to end each episode with the same question. Have a little bit of fun. Do you have any jokes, popular sayings, tongue twisters, cool slang words, idioms, words of wisdom, or words of advice in Basque to share and to teach us?
I wrote some down so that I wouldn't forget.
Okay.
So I'm going to, well, I wrote down two, well, I didn't have to write down those two. But you know, we have this myth that in Basque we don't have insults, so we use the ones in Spanish or French. However, there are two insults in Basque, not insults, but words to call people or yourself that I love because they reflect like the real world. So one is choriburu, which means bird head, which is basically someone that's like, oh, like unfocused, you know, like we don't know what to do with their life. So I use that in my daily life in Spanish. Whoever is with me, they will listen to it. If you don't know what that is, just come and ask. And another one, it's artaburu, which is corn head, which is just a funny way of calling someone idiot. So for me, it's funny thinking that at some point those were serious insults. This is why I don't know, I like to preserve them. I love them.
Yeah.
And then I brought some sayings, but I have to read this. Well, one of the most famous one, I think it's also the how do you say, like the little phrase that represents a brand.
Like a slogan? Or
slogan, maybe? Yeah, I don't know. But it says, Gogoko lekuan aldaparik ez, which means in the place that you like or in a place where you are like confident and comfortable, there are no slopes. You know that the Basque Country is it's a place full of mountains. So basically, it's very representative. You know, like the slopes will be an obstacle if you are happy where you are. And then another one is a bit dramatic, but that's me, I guess. It says, Iliak lurpera bisiak maira, which is the death underground and the living to the table. So it's like, for me, that's funny because it's a priority for Basque people to eat, but also the meaning is like, Okay, leave the past and focus. Like, what do you need to do now? Just eat, forget it. But yeah, very dramatic.
I like both of them.
Yeah, they're representatives. They're cool.
And my pencil,
cool.
my pencil is back, which means you choose one that you want to teach me so I can write it phonetically and I can try to practice saying it along with you.
Iyak. So,
Iyak?
Yeah, the L is like palatal. It's up there, like the GLL in Italian that I know that you speak, you know?
Oh, yeah. Si, si,
like,
si.
Iyak. Okay, first word. Lurpera.
Iliac. Iliac.
Lurpera.
Lurpera.
Exactly. Lur is like the earth. And pe is like winning.
Ooh.
And ra, obviously, is the declination. Yeah, if I start like this, I won't finish. Anyway, so we have Iliac Lurpera. And then second step, Bisiac.
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 Yeah. Mayra.
Wait, Mayra.
Perfect, you got this.
Okay. Iliac Lurpera?
Lurpera?
Lurpera. Lurpera? Iliac Lurpera? Bisiac Mayra?
Yeah, perfect.
Let's go, Basque. Thank you. Thank you for teaching me that. And I appreciate your patience.
No, of course. I appreciate your talent.
Thank you again so much.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed chatting with you. I learned so much. Before I let you go, in this situation, you've been talking to someone for quite a long time. Let's say you're in Bilbao and you've been talking to someone for a long time. And you are enjoying the conversation, you had a good time, but now you're getting ready to go your separate ways. What is the best way in the Basque Country to say goodbye?
I think agur is the most extended one. Agur.
Agur.
Agur with a G. Agur.
Agur.
Yeah, exactly.
Agur. Like aguri? Like.
Yeah, it comes from the same place. It's like good luck from Latin kind of thing. Yes, you are all set for us. You have all the resources.
I'm ready. I am so ready. Agur, Eukene, Eskarigasko. Thank you again. And I'll be talking to you soon. Bye.
Eskarigasko, suri. Agur.
New episodes of Speaking Tongues are available every Monday, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and to like and share episodes with other language lovers like ourselves.